Welcome back to Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast. I'm Sherry Christensen, and I hope you'll enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode 51 of Embrace the Grain. Today, I have a super special guest with us. It is Oscar Campos from Oscar Campos Photography. Hi, Oscar.
Hi, Miss Sherry, and hi, everybody.
So, I thought we could start out today with you telling us what you like to shoot.
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Oscar. I'm based out of Northern California near the San Francisco Bay Area. I enjoy primarily photographing people. That's whether it's my family or your family or weddings or, you know, quinceañeras or sweet 16s. Anything that involves a person is what I enjoy the most. I think for me, it's not just photography, but it's the opportunity that I get to share with the person that I'm making photos with. You know, I get to hear their story. You know, I enjoy high school seniors a lot as well, because I get to hear about their wants, their wishes, their desires. And I love hearing about their unjaded view of the future. So I'm pretty much a people person photographer. I have a thing for black and white more than color photography, but I know that like my wife says, the modern world is in color as much as I love black and white photography.
You know, I find that funny because my dad always says, oh, great picture, too bad it's not color. And I'll be honest, I love color more than black and white, but black and white does have its place.
It does. It really does for me. And especially with, there's something to me about black and white portraits that are just unbeatable. It doesn't matter to me which film it is or what format it's in. There's just something to them that's just timeless, and you can just stare at it. And, you know, something about the missing of color, missing of information, just does something for me.
Right. So is your photography, is that like a hobby for you, or is that something that you do as an extra, like a side gig?
So I am a software engineer by trade. I have been in the industry since, I don't know, 1999. I've been here a while. But my photography is also my side business. It's something that I enjoy. I do on the evenings and the weekends when time permits. And my family permits, because I also have, you know, 4 total children, 3 little ones and a wife. So, yeah, it's my passion. It's something I enjoy. I home develop and I home scan color in black and white. I'm like you, Miss Sherry. I think that color is so easy to do because I can throw 4 rolls of color in one batch and get it all done at the same time.
And it is quick and dirty. I noticed that the other day when I was catching up on my backlog, I had 3 rolls of black and white. And I only have, like, and they were in 120, so it was 1 roll at a time. I need a bigger tank. But I was sitting there thinking, okay, I shot this one at this, and I shot this one at that, and I can use this developer. I can use this one twice, but no, I got to mix different for that. It's like, oh, what a pain in the bum.
Yes, I agree. And that's one of my things that I've been kind of thinking about a lot more. I mean, I started shooting film again back in 2016, I think I read Jonathan Conlon's original book, you know, Film Is Not Dead. I bought that book and it re-sparked kind of film photography for me again. Of course, you know, like everybody, you're excited and you buy one of every kind of film, you know, and you're like, oh man, I can't wait to see what kind of colors I get out of this one, or, you know, this or that. And, you know, while albeit that was fun, I think it led to a lot of, you know, colors that I wasn't quite expecting and wasn't shooting properly for, you know, right. And a little bit of disappointment, you know, but now I know what I like, and I, you know, there's certain films, especially in black and white, that for me, that I have like three films, because I've recently fallen in love with T-Max 3200. I really love that film. So that kind of became my third film that I really, in black and white, really enjoy. And yeah, I've been trying to, like you, you know, it's kind of hard when you have different kinds of film. Then you're like, oh, what developer, how much time? And it makes it a little bit more complicated of a process for sure.
Yeah, and I know, I remember I usually shoot HP5 at 800. And for some reason, I did not write on the roll that I shot that one at box speed. And I'm sitting there, and I shot this at Sunny 16 because this camera doesn't have a meter. I'm almost like 90% sure I shot it at 400. And I've got it in the tank, ready to go for 800. And I thought, I better quickly look up my time for 400, and I'll just do it as that. And when it come out, yeah, I went, oh, good, I was right.
Yeah, that's one of those things, right? If I try to write it on the canister so that I remember, with 35 at least, you know, 35, try to put it on there. But yeah, sometimes you forget. I know I have those. I'm like, all right, let's see what happens with this one. I forgot what I shot this at or what this was. Let's see. I'll shoot it. I'll develop it at box speed and see what happens.
Right, that roll of painter's tape is really helpful because I just rip a piece off it and stick it to whatever. But for that roll, I had forgotten, and I'm going, oh.
Yeah.
So like you mentioned, this is your side gig. Do you find it difficult to find the time to fit it all in?
You know, absolutely. There are times. So with my career and my kids and my wife, you know, there are times where we have, you know, competing priorities. So I do definitely for myself do find sometimes it is difficult to make more time to photography, especially because being where I live, I primarily commute to the Bay Area. So I would generally, thanks to COVID, I don't commute as much, but pre-COVID, I used to commute about 3 hours a day. So that definitely ate up a bigger chunk of my day. Now being home, I have more time to dedicate to my family and dedicate to my own passions. You know, I am a hybrid photographer. I shoot both. But my vacation photos, my family photos, those are all done on film. You know, those are kind of like my own, you know, my own personal space. You know, I hope to leave my kids, my grandkids with boxes of negatives one day to kind of discover the joy of what does this mean, you know, because I know in my family, my biggest inspiration, the people who drove me to take photographs were my grandparents. They both have passed. But when I go to my mom's house, who has their home that's from 1892, my mom has photo albums from my grandparents dating back to the early 60s. So documenting my family first coming to the United States, because my grandparents were both from Mexico, mm-hmm. and they came to California in 1963, 62 in that time frame. So there's photographs that I get to see, you know, kind of these wild discoveries of like my grandfather and my great uncles in Las Vegas before Las Vegas was as big as it is now. You know, there's things like that in there that you're like, man, this is amazing. This is history. So I think about that, especially with my own family photos. And I like to take all of our photos on film so that not only are there prints, but one day they'll discover a box of these, you know, what are these things that dad left behind or grandpa left behind? What are these negatives? And they're going to look at these and go, oh my goodness, look, this is, you know, dad when he was 20 years old, or this is, you know, my grandpa when he was just born or whatever. So
go ahead.
It's okay. No, but I do try to find time for balance. My wife is great at, you know, giving me my time. Sometimes my time starts at 9 p.m. when everybody goes to bed, you know, so yeah. I have to make my own time some days and burn, you know, the candle at the witching hour. But it's passion, it's love, it's something you enjoy, so it's worth it.
Right. I was going to ask you, like, now you say you don't, have the commute from COVID. How else has that affected your photography? Have you had, like, you'd mentioned you like to shoot seniors. Has that changed in any way?
So definitely. I mean, right when COVID hit, which was, well, in our area here in the Bay Area, we started kind of feeling some of the grumblings of it kind of mid-March. And unfortunately for me, I had a couple of weddings and quinceañeras that were canceled that were for this year. You know, those had to be canceled. Obviously, it's been slow picking back up in terms of that. I had a corporate headshot gig that I did the other day, so that was nice to get out. I mean, we have to follow all of the regulations with wearing a mask, keeping our distance, and, you know, kind of cleaning up after every event. So, yeah, it has definitely made a huge impact. One thing that I have taken from this time is I've taken this time, and since we're not really shooting as much, let's say, customer work, I'm shooting more personal work, and I'm also learning more about marketing and spending more time on my blog and my website and social media, trying to, you know, kind of get my work out there more. So even though I can't do the actual physical work that needs to be done right now, I'm doing all the back end work, all the behind the scenes work that you need to do for, you know, let's say you run a business, you need to do the back end work as well. So this is a perfect time for me to study more on the business side of aspect. I've been learning a lot about self-worth as well. So it's been good.
Yeah. That's something that most photographers absolutely detest, is the business side, but it's something we can't neglect if we're going to pursue that.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that, you know, I've lacked in for a long time, just because it is not my primary source of income. You know, I'm a software engineer by trade. I love being a software engineer. And since it's not my primary, the urgency hasn't been there. But I've kind of realized, you know, kind of looking at it, saying, you know, I do need to take this more important, because not just for myself, but because there's a whole industry that depends on photographers to hold a certain professional standard, you know, to kind of, we all have to do our part to help each other out. So,
yeah,
you know, I think about that. Think about my time, any time you lose from your family, that has a monetary value, right? So if I'm not with my family, that's costing me time and money, the time you can't get back. So,
and that was probably the biggest reason that I decided to close my business. I did not have any family time left.
That's right. Were you doing weddings and elopements and stuff like that as well when you were doing your photography business?
I did weddings, portraits, families, that type of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it got to be so it was like having two full-time jobs, and it was exhausting, so.
Yes, I can see that, definitely, and that's one of those things that I've been thinking about a lot more during this, you know, a lot of COVID time. You know, I've been doing a lot of introspection and thinking about what is important. You know, don't get me wrong, I love wedding days because it rekindles and reminds me of the day my wife and I got married. You know, I hear those. I'm sorry, I don't want to be cheesy. I know I'm a guy. Okay, whatever. But I'll be honest, like, I love weddings because it takes me back to my wedding day. And I love and adore my wife. And just having been able to sort of relive that day through the people that are getting married is fantastic. You know, it's like an honor for me to be there. And I enjoy their wedding day. And I always thank them for allowing me to share in their day. But at the same time, like you're saying, that's a whole day that I don't get to spend with my family. You know, it's a whole day that I don't get to be with them. And then the editing.
Yes. You've got a couple weeks at least per wedding afterwards where you have to sit down and call and make their wedding book and do all of that fun stuff that nobody ever sees. They just think you go and you push the button and it should be done.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, and that's one of those things that for me, as I've been learning about a little bit more about business, obviously, if you get to the point where your business is self-sustaining, sometimes you outsource some of that work. I'm not at that point myself, but I, you know, I've been kind of learning and trying to understand from a business standpoint when that makes sense, because it's like, what is your time worth with your family or otherwise? So, yeah, no, good for you, Michelle, for, you know, taking the time to evaluate that and say, hey, my family is more important, because ultimately they are.
Right, right. So you had mentioned earlier you were working on setting up your website and such. Maybe we could chat a little bit about websites tonight.
That would be fantastic. I would love to talk about websites tonight.
All right.
I've been in the industry for 20 years. You know, I've worked at a whole different kinds of San Francisco startups. I currently work at Adobe. I've been there for 2.5 years. Yes, I get the full Creative Cloud for free, which is fantastic. one of the few perks of, you know, working at Adobe is I get all of it for free, yeah. Which is awesome.
I was just kidding earlier when I was asking you for Lightroom 6 standalone. I know it doesn't exist anymore, and I'm fine with Lightroom 5 for what I need.
Yeah, you know, I actually looked online because I've been asked before, and I've never taken really the time to look at our employee benefits regarding software. You're right. They no longer offer Lightroom 6 on its own. They do offer for employees, you know, like Stan, they offer discounted yearly memberships on Creative Cloud now.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what they want everybody to have.
Yeah. And being said, I've already bought my software, I'm too cheap to actually purchase more. So, especially when it's all working well, you know.
Yes. Correct.
Eventually, someday, I'm going to have to, but not yet.
Correct. And if it works, why fix it, right? It's working for you. If you want to talk about websites, one of my big takes is I've been fortunate enough to be in this industry, and I've had the opportunity to also use different very popular web platforms, right? So I'm sure everybody knows WordPress.
Yes.
Everybody knows Squarespace.
Yes.
And one other slightly known one is also Wix. I had a friend who worked at Wix, so I got to try out Wix and kind of get an idea for those. So one, I'll start and say, hey, you know what? If you're an amateur photographer, if you're a professional, obviously if you're a professional photographer, you need a website. Do I think if you're just an amateur photographer that just likes taking pictures, do you need a website? Honestly, I would tell you yes. And why I tell you yes is because we have to realize that whenever you upload your images onto any social media website, you have to play by their rules, right? So let's say you're a photographer that likes taking tasteful nudes. Your account could get banned on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, right? For posting those types of things, which you don't find offensive, but someone else might.
Right.
You know, and that might be what you enjoy. And to me, that's kind of one of those big things where I think, hey, you know what? If you have your own website, even if it's a free one, even if I go out there and get, you know, oscar.wordpress.com and it's free, at least I own my content. You know, maybe no one's seeing it. Maybe I'm sharing links to it from my Facebook and other people can see it, you know, but at least you own what's yours. Also, too, if you read through the big, you know, user acceptance, the EULAs through a lot of these websites, you know, they can technically use your photographs for their own use as well. So that's something to think about. To me, obviously, it's not that big a concern, that whole part. But I think, you know, being able to control your own content should be important to you. And we can get into, you know, I've used Squarespace, I've used WordPress, I've used Wix, and now I run my own website since I have those HTML skills. And I will say that, you know, for what you get for Squarespace, it's very hard to beat for the $9 a month. I believe it's $10 a month, right, when you do the one-year plan. Their stuff is great. Laying out pages is fantastic. Their mobile response, you know, the way it works on phones is, you know, very good. Really easy to upload your pictures. Really easy to get a very beautiful, professional-looking website up and running. You know, my whole problem with WordPress would be, Squarespace would be that the blogging, if you're like someone who likes to blog, it's not as easy as you would like it to be. You know, it's not that simple. It's a little more, it feels a little more clunky than if you're just adding pages of beautiful images on there.
So it's more for gallery type work than for putting in a blog.
Yeah, definitely. And I know that some people do use the blogging function. I tried for about 2 years and just never got along with it. Me and me and Squarespace's blogging just did not, it didn't make sense in my brain. I struggled with it. It didn't do exactly what I need to do. So for me, I think the blogging aspect is a little rougher on the edges, but a lot of the other things are really polished really well. You know, if you want to get a store set up to sell prints, theirs is really easy. I think it's $20 a month to start taking payments and, you know, processing, you know, selling digital download photos, stuff like that. It does a phenomenal job.
Right, right. So what about a platform like WordPress? Because that's actually what I'm using for the Frugal Film project right now. And I do use the blogging function.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say is WordPress is fantastic. The WordPress is great. It's meant for blogging. It's meant for being able to get your content there very easily. Though, you know, where WordPress gets maybe a little bit trickier is if you are getting into smaller detail things of like performance, you know, faster loading images, sites that load a little bit faster. That's where WordPress gets a little bit difficult. And I think the trickiest thing with WordPress is also finding a theme that is free, that looks like you want without requiring you to do a lot of work. There's a lot of themes you can pay for. I've seen some fantastic ones. I think like ThemeForest is a company that you can like, I think do a yearly license, or you can buy a one-off theme from them, slightly modify it, and use that for your site, and you're going to have a fantastic, beautiful website. Pretty easy too. I think most of their themes run $20 to $59, and it's a one-time license, or you could do a yearly so you can get updates and whatnot. But like you were saying earlier, if my software just works, it just works. So
right.
WordPress is fantastic. Honestly, the thing that gets tricky again too is finding, let's say you want to sell prints or offer digital services. It then will require you to do a little bit more research in finding the right WordPress plugin for you. You know, which one has, you know, the best reviews, which one can I add in real easy, you know, in terms of, you know, tying in for e-commerce type things where Squarespace is just built in. You pay a little extra money, now you activate it, it's good to go. But WordPress honestly is fantastic. I know you can get websites for free, I believe, or really cheap, maybe like $10 a year. That's a great place to start. Highly recommended. You know, you can use one of their, they offer tons of free themes to start with. You can do that, or you can pay for a $30 or $40 theme and you're off to the horse races. It's fantastic.
I think what I'm using right now, it is not one of the cheap plans, but it's ad free. And they also look after the domain name and all of that stuff for me. And what else was I going to say about it? They look after the domain and all that fun stuff where I don't have to touch any of that. But I did find the e-commerce and all that stuff was kind of difficult to navigate.
Yes.
And all the widgets and all these add-on things, it's like, I don't need that stuff. I want something that's straightforward, and I want to look at the pictures and read the little blurb that each person's put with them, and that's what I want. And that's all.
Agreed. And that's one of the difficulties definitely with WordPress is that a lot of the people who build the themes, right, they try to give you the kitchen sink. They try to give you everything in the kitchen sink. Just in case that you want to use that. But sometimes for most of us, we don't need, you know, that many bells and whistles and dials. And it's hard to turn them off as well. Sometimes it can be tricky to get the right things turned off so that you get exactly what you need.
Yeah.
So that's one thing with WordPress. I mean, other than that, it's fantastic. And like you're saying, if you go through a host that will manage your domain registration for you and all your hosting and all your security updates, knockout plan right there for you for sure.
I know last spring I was sitting out on the tractor picking rocks of all things, and my phone just blew up from WordPress, and I'm going, what the heck's going on? Has somebody hacked the account? And I went home and looked, everything looks fine. And I asked somebody who knows a little more about this stuff than me, and he goes, no, probably it just got mentioned somewhere, and you pay for your stuff there. They'll look after you.
Awesome.
If you're worried about it, send them an email, but it calmed down in a day or two. I think they were right. It was just that it must have gotten mentioned somewhere, and but it gets your attention.
It does, definitely. Yeah, they do definitely do a, depending on your hosting plan, they do a good job of letting you know that something's going on.
Yeah. But that, yeah, especially if you're not expecting anything and then it just, boom, it's there and you've got 50 emails in 20 minutes. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, what's going on? Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. So where do you feel is a good place to get your domain and your hosting from? Through Squarespace, WordPress, Wix, whoever?
Right. So for me, I'm a big fan of buying my domain separate from my host, just because I don't, if I change hosts, I don't want to have to worry about having to deal with a domain transfer per se. You know, I would recommend, you know, either you buy your domain name from someone like GoDaddy. For me, I buy a lot of my domains through Google, actually, because Google offers automatically privacy protection on those, so people can't see your name and address of who is registered to. A lot of places will charge you extra for that privacy. Part of Google domain name registration, it's covered in the same price, which is fantastic. So that's kind of one of the things I usually recommend to customers, because I also freelance and build websites and things for other of my clients. So I usually recommend, and I tell them, hey, you know, if you want to buy a domain, either go through GoDaddy or go through Google Domains and buy your domain there, buy it separate from your host. It's just one less complication if at some point in time you're like, I need a host who's a little bit faster, because there are different levels of WordPress hosting, right? There's some that use Supercache, which makes yours, you know, websites a lot faster. And sometimes it can get a little complicated, you know, transferring your domain and your website at the same time. Whereas if you own your domain through somebody else, you can then, you know, do a little bit more technical stuff. You can initiate a domain transfer before the domain itself moves. You know, it kind of helps you out that we don't, for people who care about search engine optimization, you know, that's kind of one of those things that you kind of think about. But I definitely recommend Wix is very much a platform very similar to Squarespace. Not as many features as Squarespace, maybe a little bit easier to use than Squarespace. Their blogging is a little bit easier to use. So if you care about blogging and you're considering, you know, Wix or Squarespace, you can try them all out, I believe, on a 7-day trial. They're fantastic. WordPress is free. You know, I myself recently rebuilt my website from scratch on my own. And since I'm an engineer, you know, I look at these different companies that offer different levels of, you know, speed, performance, and all these things. Because one of the things that if you're a business person and you're looking at your website for generating traffic and revenue and new customers, one of the things we have to realize is that most of the traffic on the web now is mobile devices. It's no longer the desktop.
I have to agree with you, even in my own home. That's why I'm getting by on such an old computer, is it only gets used for this podcast now.
Exactly. You know, so you know, we have to think about our websites and our images in that same fashion, in that we need to make sure, you know, if you care about your website as a main presence for what you do, make sure you think mobile first. Mobile first is, you know, the way Google ranks your website, thinks about, you know, mm-hmm. presenting you to your customers or potential clients. You know, it's mobile first. So yeah, definitely something to think about and consider.
I know that there is a tab when I go in and make up the pages for Frugal, that there you can preview everything on like tablet, phone, and desktop before you even hit publish to make Perfect. Sure it looks exactly how you want it.
Wonderful.
You know, and I think you'd be foolish not to click every button and look.
Absolutely. And most people, I tell them, you know, like my customers, I build, when I build a website or when I'm building a page, first thing I do is look on the phone. And if it looks right on the phone, most likely it's going to look fine on the PC.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree. So what about social media?
So social media for me, you know, I've gotten better at it over the COVID time period, you know, again, with my life and it, this being my side gig, I didn't spend too much time on it, but over the last 2 months, I have been working more diligently at using social media. And, you know, I try, if you go visit my Facebook, I don't really like Facebook, sorry. But if you go visit my Facebook page, you know, Oscar Campos Photography on Facebook, I like Instagram a little bit more. I enjoy that app a little bit more. Or if you look at Oscar Campos Photography on Instagram, you know, I always try to post images from some of the galleries that I post also on my website. So you'll see me post 5 or 6 images from that same gallery. Let's say I do a high school senior shoot, I will post 5 or 6 images with a little text and usually a link back to my website. I know most people, especially Instagram, is not very link friendly. You know, that's usually a tough one. You know, it's like Instagram is this sort of pit that they try to keep you in. They don't want people leaving the app, so they don't make links for you to click out, where Facebook does allow people to click on a link and go visit your site if they want to see more. But yeah, social media is great. I mean, it's hard because it's a slippery slope in that if you don't spend enough time in the social media apps, you won't, if you care about gaining followers and attention, if you don't spend time participating, you also will not get the likes and follows that you're maybe seeking as well. So it's kind of, you know, it's one of those give and take.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that's a big time suck. You actually have to sit down and make an appointment to go, okay, I'm going to go to my Facebook page and make a post. And now I'm going to go to Instagram and make a post. And you have to do it consistently all the time.
Yeah. And that's one of those hard things, right? Is that we love our art. We love our photography. And to add that as an additional layer to the things that we feel we need to do can be very difficult. And, you know, one trick I do, and people may not like it, may not enjoy it, but if you have a Facebook page, if you go to business.facebook.com, they have a new dashboard where you can connect your Instagram, you know, your business Instagram account and your Facebook business account. You connect them on the same sort of dashboard. And from there, you can post to both platforms natively from within their desktop app. So that's kind of what I do. So I'll schedule a post. Like, for instance, I had a post go out this morning. I'll have a post that goes out in 2 days from now. So, you know, kind of have things kind of, you know, I don't always go on there. I mean, I go on there to kind of look at what other people are doing because I like to keep in contact with photographers near me. And I get inspired by looking at other people's fantastic work, you know. So I like that, you know, I like seeing everybody in our, you know, finding the box group. I love seeing all their work and I get inspired and I go, man, they're just killing it. So I enjoy doing that part. But in terms of what I post, I tend to schedule a lot of that and just take a day, maybe Sunday, sit down and just crank out a bunch of galleries, you know, do like 3 or 4 galleries, schedule those same exact posts on, you know, Facebook and Instagram, drop them on the scheduler and just let them go. And then they'll post on their own in a couple days as they go through, that way you don't have to spend so much time, you know, creating content. Cause I'll be honest, I think most of us take photographs and we probably don't like writing that much, would be my guess.
Yeah, a small paragraph is okay, but if you were to sit down and write an essay, no.
Exactly. And that's the way I look at it, right? We take photos because we're visual people. We try to tell you what we need to say in a photo. So I'm sure that most of us aren't big on writing. I'm sure there's an exception to this, but I'm like you, Miss Sherry. I'd rather talk to you. I'll talk your ear off, but I find it difficult to take these same words and put them on the computer on a piece of paper for someone else to read. Yeah.
Well, you can sit down and like, I don't know if you're like me, but I can sit down and I can say, okay, I went here and I shot this and I did that. And I'm done.
Exactly. Yes. I can give you a list of what I did. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, another thing, how important is your branding?
So, you know, that's a hard thing. So one of the things, so branding to me, I've read a lot of things about branding in the past and they always tell you about branding and they say, what is your brand? Right. And I'm like, what does that mean? And they tell you, what is your why? You know, who are you? What are you trying to say? And I struggled with that for a long time because I'm like, I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm taking pictures for my clients. They're happy with them. I'm happy with them. But what do they say? And I think that for me, branding is important in that the branding is really just a reflection of who you are. And I've been working with a career/life coach since about January, and she's been phenomenal in helping me understand who I am as a person. What is my personal brand? You know, and what are the things that I bring? And what are the things that I offer naturally? Because that's who I am as a person. And that's what really is your brand. It's not your marketing material. It's not your colors. It's not your flashy logo. You know, your brand is really who you are as a person. And what are the things that you bring to the table that are unique, that make you different from everybody else? And I think that, you know, a lot of photographers like Zach Arias, one of my favorites. I love that guy. And he always talks about, you know, he has all his videos about quitting and, you know, just feeling kind of distraught and feeling like I have no passion for this any longer. And in those things, I think that when you dig into yourself, I think all of us feel that imposter syndrome at times.
Yes.
And with that is because you're trying to understand, like, what am I doing? Am I just faking it? But it's not. It's, I think we're just trying to find our way. And in our branding, it's really who you are as a person. And that kind of comes out. And I think your branding is more it's not something you can define like outwardly, you know, forward thinking. It's more kind of retrospective looking. You have to spend time looking at yourself and saying, who am I? Like my coach taught me, you know, and what I've learned so far is that, and to me, back thinking about being spontaneous used to lead to a lot of anxiety for me. And now because of, you know, our talks and our conversations and different things that I've exercised that we've worked on, I've learned that I am a very responsible, loyal person. I am hardworking. So spontaneity is not, when I am spontaneous, it's not going to be irresponsible, which is what I used to always think, you know, because growing up, you know, you kind of learn these things that like, oh, you got to be responsible. You got to plan. You got to always have a plan. You can't just do things off the cuff because you're being irresponsible. But I learned, you know, that through your framework and who you are as a person, if you're responsible, you can be spontaneous because it'll fall within who you are. So branding is really just a reflection of who you are as a person. You know, are you loyal, responsible, caring, social, outgoing? Those are all, I think, part of your brand. And I think that, you know, as photographers, as creatives, period, I think we get caught up too much looking at the colors of our website, the layout of our website. You know, does this logo say everything about me? And it's like, it's never going to say everything about you because there's so much character in each one of us that our brand is more easily represented in our interactions with other human beings, whether it be on video or like this in a podcast where you get an opportunity to chat and really show who you are as a person. So I think in terms of online branding, you know, that's so difficult. I've thought about it myself and say, you know, how do you actually portray what that means? And I think maybe in video is the best way, you know, one-on-one conversations, word of mouth, that's really your brand. That's how your brand gets spread out. I mean, I don't know if that's helpful at all, but that's kind of how I've been thinking about it a lot more.
Yeah, those are a lot of really good points. You know, I always felt the branding wasn't the paper, it wasn't the business card, it wasn't any of that, it was the photo. Do you like the photo? Is the photo what you wanted? That was my brand.
Right, exactly. And did I give you, like for me, I always think, did I give you the experience? Did I meet your expectations? You know, when you left, did you leave feeling like, man, that was fantastic? Like, I had a wonderful time and the product that was delivered to me met or exceeded my expectations. So yeah, definitely. I think logo branding and website branding is a very difficult thing to tackle because, one, we're never happy with it. It's right. a good source. Trust me, I know because I build people's websites. It's a good source of income because people want to rebrand every couple of years and, you know.
Right, right. I always felt the brand was your audience and your audience is who you wanted to work for. Makes sense?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. And I think Jonathan in one of his books, I think it's called The Biz Guide. I think I've honestly bought every single one of his guides because I love his photography. I love his personal family photos, you know, seeing pictures of his kids and I look at those and I say, damn, those are fantastic, you know, and I love it. But one of his lines, if I remember correctly, in one of his books, I think it was The Biz Guide, he said something like, you know, he has you break down who you think your ideal client is. And basically what he says is that, and it makes sense, your ideal client, your ideal customer is just like you, but they might be someone who has more money to spend on the things that you sell.
You know, that ideal client phrase is always something like, the ideal client is the one that's coming to me and wanting me to work for them. That's my ideal client. Now, you know, like I can work with anybody.
Right. That is true. I find myself the same way. You know, I could, like my wife says, you know, I could talk to a brick wall and make a friend.
Yeah. So like you were mentioning Jonathan's community there. Do you feel like being part of an online community like that is beneficial, helps you grow, or is just having your online presence enough?
You know, any kind of community that you can build is beneficial, whether it's online, in person. I know that some of us live, like yourself, for instance, in a very rural location where you don't have access to other people with the same interests as you nearby. Right. So I think online communities are fantastic. I belong to several, you know, and I find they all scratch a certain itch. I haven't found one that scratches every itch for me yet. You know, I haven't found one where I'm like, yes, this is the perfect place for me. I found, you know, Finding the Box, you know, that family's fantastic. They're always uber helpful. You know, they're great with tips and tricks and they're, you know, very supportive people. And I enjoy them a lot. You know, I've recently joined the Negative Positives community because I hear you on your podcast talking so, you know, positive about them. So I'm like, let me give this a shot. You know, honestly, communities are great, you know.
I have to give the Negative Positives community a huge shout out because without them, I would not be doing any at-home developing at all. None.
That is true.
So, you know, I have to remember, you know, that when I had questions, there was always someone there that was ready to help and they didn't judge in any way. So that's awesome.
I agree, definitely. And it's good to find a place like that, you know, where people, like, I don't know if you ever watched the old TV show Cheers.
I did way back when it was not an old TV show.
When it was current. Yeah, I watched some reruns. But it was, you know, you want to feel like you're walking in your norm, right? When you show up, or you want to be like, Norm! You know, you walk into
where everybody's your friend. Yeah.
That is correct. Absolutely.
So let's chat about gear a little bit. So I have to ask you this. Are you a complete brand loyalist?
Well, I would say I'm a 90-20 kind of guy. I'm sorry, 80-20 kind of guy. Most of my gear is Nikon. So from the digital side to the film photography side, you know, I have a D750, a D610 for all my client digital work. I shoot at N80 or a F100 for my, you know, personal work, whether it's portraits that I take on my own personal projects. And I have a Nikon, what is that, the One Touch that I use for my point and shoot as well. So yeah, I'm sort of a Nikon guy, but to be fair, I have to disclose a couple other items that sit in my drawer, like my Yashica mat, which I really love. And I decided, actually, I was excited, like you should have heard me earlier today. I sent an email off to Mark Hama to see if he's available to CLA my Yashica mat, because I really enjoy it, but I think there's a little bit of a flair. I sent an email probably about 8 or 9 months ago, never heard back from the guy. So I wrote him again this morning, and he wrote me back at 3 o'clock this afternoon and said, I'm available, you know, to CLA your Yashica mat, send it in. This is the cost, and you should see me. I was dancing in my office. So it's like, because I really enjoy shooting that thing. I really enjoy the square format of a Yashica mat. So I have a Yashica mat, and I also have a Minolta set that my stepdad gave me when he transitioned to digital. He kind of, you know, gifted me all his Minolta gear. So I have a little bit of Minolta gear, which is fantastic. Yeah, I love that stuff. But honestly, some of the auto-focusing on the Minolta, I hate to say it, on their film cameras is maybe a little bit better than the Nikon stuff. Like, some of the ergonomics are a little bit better. Fantastic. I ended recently, we were talking before the show, I had bought a Pentax 645 that I had no luck with. So,
yeah. Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened with your 645?
So I was in my find in a box group online, and Jonathan gets off posting his Pentax 645 pictures with his Cinelux lens, and I'm going, God, those look amazing, you know those, and I'm like, you know, I should just bite the bullet and buy a Pentax 645. So, of course, you know, I hop on eBay, I'm looking at them, I find one that's mint from Japan, and I'm going, okay, great. You know, I've had nothing but good luck buying those. I bought a Pentax 645 from Japan. It said mint. It arrived. 2 days later, my 645 to 6.7 adapter arrived with my 6.7-105 arrived as well. So I was pretty excited. You know, I'm thinking, man, I have a 105 with an adapter and a 645. I'm ready off to the horse races. I get this thing. I unbox it. I feel like it's Christmas Day. You know, first thing you do is you're examining it. You're like, man, I got this beautiful, you know, piece of gear here. I'm looking at every crevice, and I'm looking at it. I'm going, wait a minute. If this is mint, why is there a little bit of oil on the mirror? Right? Uh-oh. So then there goes. Yeah. So there goes my little, you know, spidey senses start tingling. I'm going, oh, no. Please don't tell me I'm going to have some issues here. So I look at the camera. I see a little bit of oil in the mirror. I take a picture right away. I'm like, let me just document this. Let me take a picture. I get the camera, and I'm going, okay, remaining optimistic. It's probably fine. It's probably nothing. I probably clean it off. I Google it. They're like, yeah, it happens. You can just clean it off with alcohol. I'm like, okay, whatever. I get some batteries out. I get some Eneloop batteries out, some rechargeables. I go to pop them into the battery holder, and I notice – the bottom contacts are slightly oxidized.
Uh-oh. And I'm going,
yeah, exactly. I'm going, oh, man. No, that's two strikes already. This is mint.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So then I think, okay, it's probably not a bad thing. Give the seller the benefit of the doubt. Pop my batteries in. Grab a film of 120. Pop it in. Slap on my adapter with the 105 lens, and I put in the film. Nothing happens. I take it out. I reload it again. Maybe I did something wrong. Click the shutter button. It wound. And I thought, okay, great. It caught. Sounds good. Everything's great. So I go messing with the dials, and I notice that nothing's sticking. Like, I can't set the right mode. I can't set the appropriate shutter speed. Of course, the aperture is not picking up because it's a 105 lens from a 6.7 with an adapter, so it's always going to tell me, you know, no f-stop. That's fine. That's a manual. But yeah, nothing happened. I couldn't quite figure it out. I post on Find in the Box. A lot of you guys, you know, yourself included, gave me things to try. I got lots of fantastic help troubleshooting the thing. In the end, I think what ended up happening is that the Pentax 645 is picky with the voltage it needs. And since the contacts were oxidized, no matter what I did, it wasn't going to get enough juice from the battery, so it wasn't able to set itself properly. So, wah, wah.
Aww.
Yeah. Luckily, you know, eBay was fantastic and the seller was great. And they refunded my money, and I'm actually shipping it out to the seller tomorrow morning. It's funny. I look back and I think I still kind of want a 645, but then I think, you know, if I just sell my adapter, sell my 105 lens, sell the 55, because I have a 55 for the 645, which is the equivalent to like a 35 millimeter lens, because I really like the 35 field view. I thought, you know, if I could just sell all that, I can get my Yashica Mat CLA'd. And then with some leftover money, then I can, you know, the camera I've been lusting over, which you've been talking about, you've spoken about several times in your podcast, is the F6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the F6 is awesome.
I know.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I think,
you know, if it's something you know you're going to use a lot, and it's something, you know, you're going to lust after it forever, I'm never upset that I bought it.
And I played with one time, and I have to say that the shutter sounded amazing. It handled beautifully. And ever since I've always wanted one just because I'm a Nikon guy, but I got to play with one at a beers and camera meetup. Mm-hmm. And it was honestly perfect. It was just the sound. I got to take a picture with it and was like, wow, that shutter sounds great for, you know, for a 35, you know, it doesn't compare to obviously a medium format, you know, but it sounded fantastic. It felt great in the hands. And I thought, man, one of these days I'll buy one of these bad boys. So that's what I've been thinking about lately.
I have to say, though, there's one place where the F100 beats the F6. And only one. The battery. The F100 is a AA.
Yes.
The F6 is one of those lovely little CR...
1, 2, 3?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. One of those little short lithium ones that are harder to find. Yeah. And they're harder to find, whereas the AA, you can walk into any store and buy them.
That is very true and a very valid point. I know that I think the Minolta that my stepdad gave me is the Maxim 7, mm-hmm. I believe. And that one also uses the CR123s as well. So I always keep a little extra spare on hand just in case, because, yeah, I can't find those at the gas station.
No. And even when I went traveling like a year ago with my daughter and we went to Mexico and I took my F100, this was before I had the F6. The reason I took that one, even though it was bigger, because I have an F80 too. That's the same as your N80. The only reason that I took the F100 was the battery. If my battery dies, I can get a AA battery in Mexico, where I don't know where I would get one of those CR123s.
That is true. Yes, absolutely. I remember from your podcast, you traveled to Arizona because your parents are there.
Yes, they are in the winter.
Wonderful. In the winter, it's a good idea. Yeah. It's a little hot down there.
Yeah, it's a lot hotter than here.
That's for sure.
But, I can usually manage to get away for a week to 10 days, depending on what's going on around here and how long I can stand to be away from home. I'm kind of a homebody. So, anyway, we kind of touched on this earlier. I was going to ask you, did you always shoot film, or is that something that you came back to later on in life?
So it's something I came back to when I was in high school in 95, 96, 97. That's when I graduated high school in 97. So that puts me at 41. Back in high school, I actually was in the yearbook class and I learned how to shoot black and white film on a Pentax K1000. You know, I became the sports photographer and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Then, you know, life happened and kind of transitioned away from film and shot a lot of digital cameras. I remember having point and shoots pretty much all my young adulthood. And then in like 2014, 2016, somewhere around there, I found Jonathan's book, Film Is Not Dead, his original one. Mm-hmm. And I bought it and I read it and I was like, man, I miss film. And immediately dove right back in and bought my F100 that I have today. And just started developing at home, not color. I didn't do color for the longest time up until about 2 years ago. I started doing color at home, but I did all my black and white at home. Cause you know, I was like, I've done this before. It's not a problem. My wife is like, are you sure? I was like, babe, I did this in high school. I got this. And yeah, no problem.
I have to ask you this. If you could have one roll of film, now you have, there's one roll of film left in the world, and you have one camera in the world that you can shoot this one roll of film in, what would they be and what would you shoot?
So one camera, one roll. So my ultimate lust camera is a Hasselblad 500cm. That is my, like, that's why I'm, so it would be that camera. Hands down, I don't know that I would love it or not. I've never held one. I've never shot one. But I lust over that camera more than the F6. So I think it would be that. And for film, for me, honestly, a lot of people are going to probably hate me for this, but I really enjoy the T-Max films. So a T-Max 100 would be fantastic. I love how smooth and sharp they are. So I would definitely take a C100. The T-Max 100 black and white film. And if I could only shoot that one roll, I would honestly capture pictures of my mom, my stepdad, my godmother, my godfather. I would take pictures of those that I love the most, because in the end, that's what ultimately matters. And for me to have, you know, beautiful black and white portraits with a Hasselblad with the 80 millimeter lens, I think would be just like perfect.
So that's the dream combination.
That is the dream combination. T-Max 100 with the Hossie. Yeah.
Well, you never know. Someday, if you get all this side gig going really good, you know, you could come.
You know, it's one of those things where I'm sort of afraid to bite the bullet, because I don't, what if I buy one and I hate it?
Yeah, but the thing is, if you buy one and you hate it, you can always resell it.
That is true. I just don't want to hate it, you know? I just don't. It's one of those things where, you know, you see, you know, it's like that, I guess I'm sort of like that little boy that sees his baseball hero. I'm still a baseball fan, but you know, you see your baseball hero and you see him and you think about what an amazing person he is. And then what if you meet him and he's a complete jerk, you know? I'm sort of afraid that me and the Hassan will be that way, and that I buy one and I just hate it. And then I'm just like, oh man, like this did not live up to the dream or the dopamine that I produced in my brain about how awesome this thing would be. So
what a letdown, hey?
what a letdown, exactly. Yeah. So that's my only concern. But yeah, I will eventually get one. I love the square format more than any other format, so.
Right.
Yeah.
I have not really experienced anything where it was something that I really, really, really wanted, and I was really disappointed with it. Yet.
What is on your list of haven't had yet that you really, really wanted? Well, you had the F6. Obviously, that's an amazing camera.
But is there anything else? There's nothing else anymore I really, really want, because I've got my Rolleiflex and I've got my F6, and that covers both formats.
Right. Yeah. So that's right. How are you enjoying that Rolleiflex?
I really like, I'll tell the truth. I have two of them.
Do you really? I remember you bought one from someone that said, you know, if you buy this, you can't sell it, sort of. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I bought one from the original owner, and he was super fussy about who he'd sell it to. But then I seen another one that needed rescued. Mm-hmm. We'll just put it that way. It needed rescued. It was sitting on the shelf, and it looked dirty, and it looked a little sad and a little bit beat up because it was dirty. And I brought it home, and I had to send it off to Harry Fleener because it was really, it was almost to the point where it was going to be seized.
Oh, wow.
And I got it all fixed up, and it's only an automat, but it's from 1938.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And once it was cleaned up, it looked good. And once he got it fixed up on the inside, it shoots like a dream.
Really?
And I'm glad I did it because otherwise, you know, it'd be a shelf queen or who knows what would have happened to it. And it deserves to be used. So
I agree. That is pretty sad.
I just had it out actually a couple weeks ago shooting it. So, and I found a hidden speed. I thought it only went up to 1/250th of a second. And somebody said, oh, no, do this and do this, and you'll find there's a hidden gear, and you'll get 1/500th.
Oh, wow.
And so I did it, and there it was. Well, I had to go shoot a second roll to Sunny 16, some HP5 to make sure it worked. And it works fine. And I thought,
that's fantastic.
Why didn't I ever download the manual and read it?
RTFM, right? RTFM is what some people say sometimes, yes.
Oh, well, I guess, whatever. I know now.
No, that's awesome. What? I mean, I wouldn't have guessed a camera that old would have a shutter that could, yeah, go up to 1/500th of a second.
Like the newer one, the 3.5F that I have, it just goes to 1/500th, and you turn the wheel and it goes there. But this one, you turn the wheel, it goes to 1/250th. 250. And I thought, well, that's probably at that age, that's probably all it had. And somebody said, no. Oh, they were right. And they were, it wasn't all that expensive. You know, Harry's not the cheapest guy, but he is the best guy to work on them.
Absolutely. For any Rolleiflex, flex, that's for sure.
You know, if it would have been a simple matter of just getting it cleaned, I could have sent it, you know, to a local person. But this probably, after so many years, needed to be all reset and such. So, but I was glad I did it in the end. And then after I did that, a friend looked it up in his Rolleiflex book. There were only 20,000 of them made.
Oh, wow.
So that's, they made them for 2 years and they made 20,000 of them. And then, the war came along and they quit making them.
And that was it. That's amazing.
So it's somewhat of a, maybe a rarer camera.
Right. Exactly. You saved something that now works. Question about your, I know obviously you have your two Rolleiflexes. Have you ever had to have their internal baffles reflocked or anything to kind of lessen strays or anything like that, stray light or glare at all?
Both of them have been recently CLA'd, so I have no idea.
Okay.
What, you know, like the one that I bought from the original owner, he had sent it before I got it and had the bill in his hand where he had just got it back from a complete overhaul.
Wow.
So it was worth paying a little extra knowing that it had went there and come home.
Correct.
Fully serviced.
Yep, so had a clean bill of health for sure.
Yeah. So I don't know what exactly was done to them. They're probably, if it needed it, it was done. You know what
That's
I mean?
Fantastic. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. That's kind of what I've been thinking about with my Yashica mat. I'm like, I enjoy it. Might as well send it off to get it, you know, CLA'd and adjusted and whatever Mr. Hama does with it, and hopefully it comes back like a brand new kit.
Yeah. And the thing about these old mechanical cameras, if they're made of metal, And if you service them, they're going to last your lifetime.
That is true.
Like that 3.5F, this guy bought it when he was a young man in the mid-50s, and it lasted him a lifetime.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, I do have the owner's manual for that one, but I can't read it. It's Portuguese.
Different language? Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Wow. But it's probably, you know, it's pretty cool. So, yeah. So, yeah, I would definitely send your Yashica mat off to get a service.
I will definitely. Yeah, like I said, I got his email today, so I'm pretty excited to package it off and send it because I really enjoy the square format and enjoy. There's something strangely entertaining, frustrating about looking upside down at your image, but it's great.
I know I bought the eye level viewfinder for my 3.5F. So it's like holding it up to your eye and looking through it. There's no upside down, left or right mix up. It's you look through it. But that is so different to shoot with because it's kind of awkward to hold the camera up to your face and push the button.
Yes.
It's going to take some getting used to, but yeah.
I'll have to tag you in a photo that I saw that Rodney Smith's foundation, I think, posted the other day. They actually had a photographer that was holding their Rolleiflex. I think they were doing the same thing you're saying, right? Looking through the viewfinder. And basically what he did was he held it sideways instead of vertical.
Mm-hmm.
So he held it sideways so that his finger was resting on the shutter button because, you know, it's at the bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
And was taking a picture with it sideways. And I thought, that's pretty interesting because, yeah, it doesn't really matter what direction. It's a square. So a square is a square, whether it's on its side or proper orientation.
That's 100% true. That is a really good idea. I never thought of that. I'll have to try that. I know I've held it upside down before to get the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was down below and they were up above and whatever it was, I can't remember exactly. So I just laid down on the ground and held it upside down and did it.
That's awesome. We're good. And I was going to say, that's one of those things about having a waist-level viewfinder that makes it very different than most other formats and or other viewfinders in that you can lay, you know, the camera on the ground and get a different perspective that you couldn't have gotten otherwise or weren't feeling comfortable to do otherwise.
Well, and another thing, you know, every once in a while I go over and shoot my one daughter and she wants her dog in the photo. But the dog came from a rescue, so when you hold anything up to your face,
she won't
look at you or she won't cooperate in any way. So I take the rolly over with the waist level viewfinder. I set everything else up and then I just put it down at my waist and shoot that way and she doesn't even realize that it's happening.
That's awesome.
Problem solved.
Problem solved. Yes. Have you shot much or any strobes with your film photography?
I have shot a Nikon FE with strobes, and I shot my F100 with my strobes, but a whole ton, just enough to try it out.
How did you like it, or what did you find it difficult at all, or any lessons learned?
Actually, it's not difficult. It's exactly, if you use your light meter, it's exactly the same as using a digital.
Okay.
But you have to, I have to use my light meter to get the proper settings first. So I just hook it through, my light meter has like a PC port.
Mm-hmm.
And I hook that to my camera. And it will flash my strobes.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I was playing a while ago with my F100 and some strobes, and T-Max 3200. And I haven't gone through all my files yet, but yeah, I was kind of playing with it, trying to figure out, you know, if you meter the light at someone's face at F8, what happens if you set your meter at, you know, the camera itself at F8 versus 5.6 versus F4 versus 2.8? Because 2.8 would be the darkest side of the face.
Right. Yeah. I did make my daughter sit down, and I did an experiment with three shots where I did that once. Mm-hmm. And the one that I personally preferred was the mid-tones.
Okay.
But not everybody prefers that, you know.
Right. Interesting. But, yeah, I'll have to finish developing my role and checking that out as well.
But it's not something I'm very good at, I'll tell you that.
But, you know, it's one of those things it takes quite a bit of practice, and I've been trying to get more comfortable with my strobes as well. You know, just trying to get more familiar with them so that it doesn't feel so awkward. Because, you know, shooting in the natural light is beautiful, but we don't always have it.
No, that's 100% sure. And also, I have my strobe has a grid in it. And I've used that so I can black out my background, because it's not always 100% pretty.
Yep. Yeah, I know how that goes.
That works really good, actually.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just have I have two alien bees and a couple umbrellas. That's it.
That's all you need.
That's all you need. And, hey, I bought them used off the online garage sales, so...
Good for you. You know, Miss Sherry, I tell that a lot of people who want to get into photography, for instance, my daughter, she's an art major and, you know, loves photography. I told her, I was like, go buy a used camera. They're all good.
Yeah, that's what I started with. A used Nikon D80.
Beautiful.
It was good enough to start with. And exactly. Then I think I upgraded to a used D90, and yeah, that led to a whole nother line of stuff, but I still have the next upgrade from that. I still have both of those. They're left over from my business days, so
that's awesome.
But my daughter uses the one and I use the other one.
That's great. Yeah, they, you know, nowadays most cameras are good enough. It's just on your own skill.
And, you know, I'll be honest with you, my iPhone has just as good a camera in it as the D80 had.
Right. Oh, for sure. And it's way more portable.
It's definitely more portable. It's not as versatile for your photos, though, but it's correct. Definitely more portable.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so... Anyway, we've had a good chat tonight. So why don't you tell us your socials so people can find you online, Oscar?
Absolutely. So you can find me on Instagram or Facebook at Oscar Campos Photography. You know, if you have any questions, if I can answer any questions, really, I'll be more than glad to help you. I'm a low carb keto guy. I'm a film digital photographer. I love baseball. I love football. You name it, I can chat your ear off about it. You know, feel free to reach out to me and I'll be more than glad to have a conversation with you.
Awesome. Awesome. And I guess I have to put this in there. So stop by and buy me a cup of coffee over on Ko-Fi at Embrace the Grain Podcast. Now, the old computer made it through another episode, so we're still hanging in there, but I have to say earlier tonight, it gave me a whole ton of grief. So I'm hoping that that little bit that you would care to donate to upgrading my equipment would be much appreciated. And hey, I'd really love to have an email from you over on my email at embracethegrainpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can catch up to me on Instagram at embrace_the_grain. So everybody stay positive and embrace the grain. Bye for this week.
Thank you, Miss Sherry.
Thank you for coming on, Oscar.